The views expressed on the following show may not be those of the hosts, guests, or WSPN Skidmore Radio. Talk Saratoga is produced by Saratoga Broadcasting Incorporated and may not be reproduced in part or in whole unless expressed written approval is given. Now, here are the hosts of Talk Saratoga, Rick Thompson and a Saratoga All-Star.
Good morning and welcome to Talk Saratoga. And our special guest, who's one of the, I call him a pillar of Saratoga because he's involved in so much with Saratoga, and we've been in a lot of civic projects together. Pat Kane, good morning, Pat.
Rick, how are you? Thanks so much for having me on.
Oh gosh, it's always. I mean, you, if you had the time, I'd love to have you as a co-host. I really would, because you know so much and going on with so many people in that, and we've had fun over the years, and the family's great, and I can't say enough about you. But
thanks.
Thanksgiving is come and gone,
mm-hmm.
and we're now going into the Christmas season.
Wait a minute, Home Depot was in the Christmas season about a month ago.
Oh, yeah. Well, most of the stores right before, well, it was funny because, you know, I drive a school bus for upstate. Yeah. It's an independent bus company. And when was it? It had to be, it was the week before Halloween. I do a couple Skidmore runs from the Case Center to the Horse Barn. And I got in to do my Friday morning runs. I do, when I get back, I do three or four of them. And I turned the radio on to 98.3. And what did I hear? But I'm Christmas. Dreaming of a white Christmas.
Yeah, that's right.
Now it wasn't even Halloween.
Yeah, I know.
And they used to start the day after Thanksgiving.
Yeah.
And then it got pushed back farther. Now it's a week before Halloween.
Yeah.
Pretty soon it's going to be right after Labor Day.
I know.
You know? When you think about it, I mean, we've lost all the meaning of what Christmas really is.
Yes.
And now it's so commercial that,
sure.
You know, but I read an article, online this morning that Black Christmas exceeded.
Really?
Yes. And you know, with the internet
purchasing
and the Black Fridays on internet starting like a couple weeks ago,
mm-hmm.
That's pretty good. I'm glad.
Yeah.
I like the brick and mortar stores to do really well.
I agree.
You know?
I mean, they've got a lot at stake here in the community.
Yeah, they do. And all over, they said the Crossgates Mall and Colony Shopping Center was packed, and
good.
I like to see that.
Good.
You know, so it is the season this Thursday night, the Victorian Street Walk, and it's the first time since COVID that they're blocking off Broadway, and they're only doing it on one night. I think before after COVID, they did three nights,
okay.
so they wouldn't have the big crowds, you know, to get together, so they're back to normal. And so things are starting to get back. I think we should be back to pretty much normal right now.
Yeah.
And I think COVID now is like the flu. And we get our booster shot in the fall like we do the flu shot. And, everything's copacetic.
Yeah.
I don't know. Hey, we got a lot to talk about.
I know. I'm driving up here this morning. First of all, the temperatures were so abrasive, I should say.
Yeah.
And it was cold.
Well, it was 13 when I left home this morning at 6:30, and it got warmer. It's up to 16 degrees now. So
yeah,
so it is warming up.
So this morning, got up and went to let the dogs out, and you open up the door. The dog looks you back in the eye like, you're not expecting me to go out here, are you?
Yeah, really.
They're like, it's kind of nice inside.
Yeah, can't you heat up the lawn,
a little bit?
But, one thing I said to a friend the other day, and I don't know if you paid any attention to this, but in the fall, you always hear geese flying over. I mean, there's, you know, they fly in that V formation and they're honking all over the place. And I didn't hear any of them.
You're right.
This fall.
You're right. As you say that, I don't think I did either.
No. So this morning I left my water in the car and I went out to get it. And what did I see? a big V formation of geese, and they're honking like crazy. Yeah. And that's kind of late now for that.
I would have thought they'd smarten up and leave earlier.
Me too. They must have found something to go on. Yeah, that's right. Had some goose party or something. But what football team do you follow?
You know, I hate to say this. I used to follow the Bills pretty religiously.
Yeah.
And, years ago, you and I are of an age where we remember when the New York Jets won the Super Bowl.
That was
in 69 and whatnot. But now I watch some teams that I just kind of like the personnel and what they stand for.
Right.
You know, when I see these guys misbehaving, I kind of just, I don't like the team anymore.
No.
But, you know, I like old quarterbacks. I have an affinity for old quarterbacks. And I stress the old. You know, I was a Peyton Manning fan when he was, you know, towards the tail end of his career as well. And Rodgers, I don't particularly like as a person, but he's a good quarterback.
A good quarterback. Yep. Of course, the Jets. I can't believe it. I was a Jets fan up till probably the 90s.
Yeah.
And then I turned Buffalo Bills, you know, and I kind of like to watch. I was always a Washington Redskins fan. Yeah. From back when George Allen was the coach, but when they changed their name, I said, that's it. I'm done. But I'm a Bills. I've been a Bills fan for years, and I just can't take all the baloney that's going on today. But I was out to lunch with a young lady last week, one of the students here from Skidmore, and she loves football, and she loves old quarterbacks.
There we go.
She said, you know, Roger Staubach was in the league for so long. Now, here's a 21-year-old kid. And she says, you know, Aaron Rodgers has been in so long. And she was naming off all these quarterbacks that I didn't even remember the names of. Mm-hmm. And she said, I just like old quarterbacks and because they make the team.
Yeah.
If they have one good receiver, a good quarterback, like Rodgers or Mahomes can really do good. Yeah. I mean, you know, you have a quarterback that was drafted in the second round, like the Jets did, that can't throw a ball to anybody.
Yeah.
It's kind of sad, you know.
Yeah. Well, but, you know, there's 28 teams, and so oftentimes, you know, you look around and say, do we have 28 quarterbacks? And truthfully, you don't. Well, obviously, they've learned to play the position. They've done well in college. But the pros is a different game. So when they come up there and they're looking around, and a lot has to be said for if they have a decent offensive line. I was watching the fellow that was for Miami yesterday. He got rid of the ball in 2.17 seconds. That's fast.
Yeah, it is.
Now, he's a lefty, so that he's a little bit unorthodox in that respect. But by the same token, he's got a line that can hold long enough for him to get the ball out of his hand into the receiver.
Sure.
And that makes all the difference in the world. And when you look at these big quarterbacks or great quarterbacks, Staubach is one of them. Terry Bradshaw is another one where they had
Joe Montana.
They had a good offensive line. Yeah. The offensive line didn't get a whole lot of credit, but they held tight and gave them that extra second or two and not to have to scramble.
Exactly.
But I know you'd appreciate this. I saw a special the other day on Fran Tarkington. And so they showed Fran Tarkington. Of course, it seemed to all be about when he was with the Vikings. I think you and I remember when he played that way for the Giants prior going to the Vikings. But that scrambling quarterback is, you know, you might as well put a target on their head, their back, their shoulders, their ankles, their knees, because they get pounded.
But back then it was a lot different.
Oh yeah,
the defense could do a lot more to a quarterback than they can now. Yeah. They kind of protect the quarterback. Yeah. The rules do.
Yeah, yeah.
Oh, even receivers. I mean, look at the Oakland Raiders, what they used to do. Their cornerbacks and safeties. I mean, they were out to kill you.
They were out to Was it Jack Tatum?
Well, he's the one, I think, that really put a hit on that New England Patriots.
Yeah, Darryl Stingley.
Darryl Stingley. Yeah. And but yesterday, the Jets game, I didn't watch. I watched some of it. The quarterback for Miami, too. One of my favorite two college teams are Syracuse, sad to say, and Alabama.
Yeah.
And the quarterback for Miami was an Alabama quarterback, Taratoglia or something. Yeah. I can't pronounce his last name.
He's a good ball player, though.
He is. Oh, he was great. He was great at Alabama. And when he came up to Miami, he was great when he first got in. Usually it takes him 2 or 3 years to develop any kind of being a good quarterback. But yesterday in the Jets game, did you watch the game?
A little bit.
All right. The end of the game?
Yeah.
When they got in the fight, that referee got punched in the face.
That'll be on the news.
Oh, it was. I saw it on online. I went to look to see what the score was because I really did. I watched some of the beginning, but Jets got blown out. But they got in a fight, the Jets in Miami, and somebody... They said it was an accident. Mm-hmm. He had an open hand. He was trying to smack somebody in the head for Miami and hit the referee in the face. And the referee was bleeding. And, of course, both of the Jets and the Miami guy got thrown out of the game. Mm-hmm. And they'll be fined. The Jet will be fined heavily for hitting a ref. You know, one thing, other thing that bothers me about football, I guess I like to, you know, I don't like change. And I'm a very anal person when it comes to change. And I'm used to coaches wearing shirts and ties.
I know exactly what you're going to say. I felt the exact same way yesterday. It looked like the water boy running off the field. Even his shirt was out of the back end of his pants.
And you know who started that?
Who?
Bill Belichick.
You're so right.
Baggy sweatpants and that. But, I mean, you look at guys... Bud Grant and any
Hank,
of them.
Oh, Hank Stram, are, Hank Tom Stram, Landry.
You know, the shirt and tie ins. Well, Bud Grant was always famous for at Minnesota. It was so cold in Minnesota, and he would stand there with his jacket, shirt and tie on, sports coat, and a fedora, and he would not wear a jacket. He'd be breathing smoke, steam.
That's right.
He wouldn't let his players wear any long sleeve shirts under their uniforms, and that kind of freaked out the other teams that came in from warm weather cities. Yeah. And but I don't know. You look at these coaches today, and they're a mess.
I know the exact same shot you saw. It's the coach of the Miami Dolphins running across the field. First of all, he looks like an accountant more than a football coach.
Oh, yeah. He's a squirt. Skinny little thing.
Yeah, and he was wearing, literally, I wouldn't even wear that to the YMCA. He was looking so shabbily. It was too bad.
It is. Yeah, they kind of, I don't know. The projection, if you've got a coach that, projects that. I mean, even in college sports, the coaches used to dress up. You look at a lot of them, and they wear the polo shirts tucked in their pants, and they look all right, but there's nothing like the sports coat, shirt and tie, kind of distinguished looking, and of course, back then, too, you could scream in a ref's ear and get away with it. Today, you can't do that anymore. Matter of fact, I was talking with the same person last Saturday, and I said, you know, I think you're too young to remember it, but back in the 80s, there was a commercial on TV about, I can't remember what it was about, but there was a referee standing on the sidelines, and the coach was yelling right in his ear, screaming, yelling, and the referee's just standing there, and then he's home watching TV, and his wife comes in yelling, screaming in his ear, and he's just sitting there, you know, not
probably a hearing aid commercial.
Probably that could be it. But oh my gosh, how games have changed over the years, even baseball.
Yeah,
I mean, it's not the same as it was. I mean, it's evolved into a baseball, especially a sport that's unrecognizable.
Well, you we're both old timers. We love the old things, and I think nostalgia is a wonderful thing to have. Well, I remember talking to a friend of mine saying about pitchers and, you know, the fact that Nolan Ryan pitched, you know, had 5,000 strikeouts and more. I know that. I just remember seeing that 5,000. But, you know, these guys are pitching 3 innings a game, 4 innings a game, 5 innings a game. And I remember, if you look at Babe Ruth's pitching statistics, I mean, we only know him as a hitter.
Right.
But in reality, he was a phenomenal dominating pitcher.
That's right.
And at one point, I think he lost one game in the 13th inning. Complete game loss in the 13th inning. So the whole idea about the statistics and war and all the various things that come on, I was like, RBIs, and I still call them RBIs, not RBI, run batted in, average, and how many homers.
Right.
Right. Or the type of hitter they are, doubles, triples, that kind of thing. But we've come so far, but yet we really haven't.
Well, you know, one of my favorite pitchers was Bob Gibson. I mean, I'm a, like you, we're diehard Yankee fans. But I was growing up, I was a Bob Gibson fan.
Sure. Who,
and I read a statistic the other day on it was on Facebook. That his July, I forgot what year it was. I mean, the guy was a great pitcher, but his July statistic for this one year was in the month of July, he pitched 12 games, 12 complete games, and he struck out, I don't know how many. He gave up one home run during the whole year. And, you know, you don't get pitchers like that anymore. No, I mean, these great pitchers today pitch. You know, if they go into the seventh inning, that's a lot, you know. But I remember also in the story, Hank Aaron told this batter, he said, when you get up the bat, don't look at Bob Gibson. Keep your head down. He said, if you get a hit, just put your bat down gently and just jog to the base. Don't look at him. He said, because the next time up at bat, he's going to whack you off the plate. And I mean, that's how it was back then. I mean, even Hank Aaron didn't look at Bob Gibson.
That was a great, great story from Tim McCarver, who was a catcher in the Cardinals organization. And he, of course, has, we probably know him better as a broadcaster. But he tells the story that he went out to the mound one time, and Gibson says, "You're here to catch. You're not here to talk. Get away from me." And
get back behind home plate.
He was a starting catcher for the team.
He was a great catcher. Yeah,
exactly.
You know?
But that was his. But Gibson was just such a rare breed in the sense that he would just he'd bean you
just like Ryan. I mean, you didn't crowd the plate, but he didn't care. I mean, he'd throw at you. He just didn't care. Yeah. And back then, they really didn't warn you about, you know, like they do now. You get pitch inside to a batter and they warn the pitcher, and there's no more pitching inside. But Mickey, you know, going on to quotes, Mickey Mantle, they had one quote on him and on Facebook, and it said, when he hit a home run, he would put his head down and run the bases, and he never would look at the pitcher, he said, because he felt bad for him for giving up the home run, and he didn't want to show him up.
Yeah.
I mean, that's class.
Oh, yeah,
you know?
Of course.
And today, they stand there and watch the ball go out of the park and then throw the bat down, and they're looking at the pitcher, pointing at him, you know.
And then when you see these guys, you're like, you know, they think it's gone, so they do their little dance and this, and all of a sudden it's like, oh, my God, it didn't go out. I got to hustle
wall.
Out of here.
That's right. I tell you.
To me, those people are lost forever.
You know what? Like I say, it's not to start a guy on second base after nine innings, and it's crazy. Yeah. Automatically walk a guy. I've seen where they wanted to pitch around a guy to walk him on four pitches, and the guy reached out and got a single. I mean, now you don't have a chance to even do that.
Right.
You know, they hold up their arm and wave it, and there you go. And the catcher doesn't even call the pitches anymore. The bench calls it through a microphone in his helmet, and then he just puts down the sign for the pitcher.
There'll come a day where you get to call the pitchers. You right from home, you can sit there and say,
right.
Brush this guy back, you know, get him off the plate. Throw one high and tight, he'll get off the plate.
He'll get off the plate. Oh, gosh, I tell you. Well, I'll tell you what, the Yankees got a lot of rebuilding
to do.
And I hate to see how far down they've gone. Matter of fact, who was the pitcher they got? I think he was from Toronto, the relief pitcher, Zach...
Britton. He came from the Orioles.
From the Orioles. And he said...
he just retired, by the way, this week.
He did?
Yeah.
Okay, well, they had a quote from him, and probably because he retired. He said, the Yankees are just an average team now.
Oh, yeah.
They're nothing like they used to be. He said, why anybody would want to go there, I don't know. But, you know, here...
And I don't know how his tenure was with the Yankees. At one point, he got hurt, and he was, you know, whatever. But I don't think, you know, we're an average team yet. Our record certainly doesn't show anything other than average. But it's still a special place to play. I think there's a lot of people. You know, you hear the people say, I don't want to go there because I don't want to cut my hair. You know,
shave my mustache.
But I'll take the Yankees every day of the week.
Oh, I would too.
You know, it's like that imposing threat.
Yeah.
I mean, there's a mental advantage, I think. But, you know, it's wearing thin because you're seeing the Torontos and the Tampa Bays and the Houstons of the world or Texas.
The Orioles, I mean.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. Well, one of the things, I mean, and you hate to use excuses, believe me, because it happens to every team, but, I mean, they always have a rash of injuries.
Sure.
And honestly, I think these guys today work out too much. They do too much.
Oh, Stan's a perfect example of that.
Too much weight training and that, and they're always pulling hamstrings or quads or whatever. And, you know, I just think they're doing too much. I mean, heck, Babe Ruth used to eat a dozen hot dogs and five beers before a game, and look at what he did, you know. Yeah. But, well, the Yankees are trying to get some help. Some of the sports writers are putting in some things that they hear of what the Yankees are trying to do. And they're trying to get some Japanese pitchers. These two Japanese pitchers.
Have you seen his records in pitching? Oh, my Lord. Oh, he is an incredible pitcher.
And he's only 20-something years old. Yeah. And he's a phenomenal pitcher. And I heard that he wants to go to the Yankees. Yeah, now, whether they can swing a deal for him or not, I'm not sure. But the starting salary is not that unreal.
Right.
Because you don't know how these guys, when they come over to Major League over here, how that correlates to Japan. Mm-hmm. But we've had some Japanese players come over and been phenomenal. I mean, we had one from Seattle there.
Ichiro.
And the Yankees had one, too. I mean,
Ichiro played in New York.
No, he play in New York?
Yeah, he came to New York. He's number 51. Yeah.
Okay.
So he was he was there, but we also
Ichiro.
Had Hideki Matsui. Yeah, and then we had a couple of pitchers. Tanaka came and pitched very well for the Yankees. And, you know, you realize, too, you know, we're still global economy, but we're not a global speaker. So they have to go where they feel more comfortable. And I look at the fellow that's at the Angels right now. People say, he's the greatest pitcher ever. Like, not yet.
He's
doing very well, above average, compared to the people he's pitching against today. But I even harken back to the Babe Ruth thing. Babe Ruth was a pitcher, too. He pitched more games than this guy has, and he has a better winning record than this guy. But that's such an exceptional old rule, and we've somehow always made an excuse for that. Well, the ball was dead. I mean, it's still a man versus a man, baseball bat, or whatever
it is. No matter what time.
Yeah, it's a different era.
History it is.
But are these people, there's some incredibly talented people, but it's just different, right? And you look at whether it's coming from another country. I mean, we had a lot of people like Rico Cardis and people like that come up through Central America and play in the minors or majors, and
they fizzle out.
Well, but they can't communicate, and that hampers their ability
pretty
to get
much,
promotional
though,
monies.
Every team now has a translator. Yeah. They're allowed on the bench,
yeah,
and they'll go out with, with the manager if he wants to go, or the pitching coach. But I just want to say you're listening to WSPN 91.1 FM Skidmore Radio. Phone number here is 518-580-5783. If you want to chime in on anything we're talking about, please do so. That's 580-5783. And you're listening to Talk Saratoga with Rick Thompson and Pat Kane. Right now we're talking about the Yankees. They're trying to get Jordan Montgomery back.
I saw that.
I can't believe it. I mean, he's looking for a projected six-year contract for $150 million, which, I don't know. They had Montgomery. They let him go to Texas. He did great for a couple months, but I don't know if that warrants trying to get him back.
Yeah.
If there's other...
Yeah.
I mean, I'd be yanking for this Japanese player if I had my druthers. But, you know, you talked about Ohtani there from the Angels. I think pretty soon he's going to have to either be a hitter or a pitcher.
Mm-hmm.
And any team that gets him, he's going to be a free agent. Mm-hmm. Any team that gets him this year, he can't play in 2024.
He can play, but he can't pitch.
Oh, is that what it is? All right, because they said that he won't be. Maybe he can hit. But still, I don't think that's going to be good for his arm to pitch. Yeah. I think these double players, hitters and pitchers, there's not many of them, but they got to concentrate on one to be good.
Right. Like the scrambling quarterback.
I mean, yeah.
You know, they don't pass well and they don't run well. So that's just a way to throw off the defense, but it doesn't necessarily matter much. But, you know, it's interesting, too, when you think about like Mike Trout. He's been there side by side with Ohtani for a number of years. And they've got to be looking, saying, I'm the best in the league, but I can't get there. I mean, at least the Yankees believe they're going to get there.
Sure.
Right? And they fall short this year. But by the same token, you know, how do you start out as some, you know, if you're the star center fielder for the Pittsburgh Pirates, is there any chance you're going to play in the World Series? No way, Jose. You know, and it's just like.
Like Oakland. Oakland brings up great prospects.
Yeah.
But when they get good, they trade them because they don't want to pay them.
Right.
So their team is like pitiful.
Yeah.
And but it's their own doing. That what did he call Billy Bean baseball or whatever? Yeah. Because that's
Money
what
ball.
He does.
Yeah.
Billy ball. He gets them, gets good players, and then trades them away.
Yeah.
And you know, they don't have the money for the payroll. So.
But you know what's funny? Back when we were debating whether Aaron Judge was ever going to return to the Yankees before he signed this big massive contract, my oldest daughter Kendall and I were at Fenway Park, and you know I was sitting there waiting. It was obviously a Yankee Red Sox game. And I'm sitting there looking around at all the people, young and old, wearing baseball jerseys. And the jersey that I saw the most was an Aaron Judge jersey, even at Fenway Park. I mean, I would say 45, 50% of the jerseys were New York Yankee Aaron Judge. Then you'd see a Babe Ruth, and you'd see this, that. And there was a whole host of Yankee, or excuse me, Red Sox jerseys.
Right.
But I never saw a Red Sox jersey of a current player.
Right.
They were a Boggs, they were a Clemens, they were this, they were that, Poppy, of course. But they weren't current. And so that whole marketing concept of what these teams have, where they take a personality that's as remarkable as some of these teams have, some really dynamic young men in there, they play them up, and they sell a ton of jerseys, they sell a ton of hats. Even a guy, I know guys have get tattoos of the Yankees on their body.
Oh, no kidding.
Yeah, I think I'm in the room with one right now, you know, but you get to that point where it's a heart and soul thing. And I think there's, we all know the trials and tribulation, what's going on in the world today around either here domestically or internationally, but it's nice to have a team that you're passionate about.
Oh, definitely.
And I don't know how some of these teams hold on to their fans because they seem to always have the heartbreaking thing. But I had a 10-year run at Fenway Park with season tickets because I love baseball.
Right.
And they didn't win anything. And it was like every seventh inning when the Red Sox would go from having the lead to losing, you'd be,
would be walking out.
They'd be walking out. And now they've won the World Series about four times, you know, so you're a proud Red Sox fan. But it's just something kind of cool. See, you know, young girls, boys, everything wearing some sports teams and or soccer's a big deal, of course, so many times. But it's really cool to see people have this athletic passion that just drives the bus for them.
Well, you know, but you don't see that at Yankee Stadium. You don't see many people wearing a Red Sox.
No, you're right.
You know, you may see Yankees all over. I mean, any stadium the Yankees play in, there's always fans wearing Yankee jerseys. But I remember going down to Yankee Stadium, and as you know, Pat Pepino has a trip every year, and I went down one time with him, and you know, Yankee fans all over the place, and this one idiot, and I just call him an idiot for what he did. I mean, you can be a Boston Red Sox fan in Yankee Stadium, and that's great. I mean, you're rooting for your team. But Yankees were losing, and Boston was winning. You could see on the scoreboard, Boston, and this guy kept running up and saying, Boston's ahead 5-0, Yankees are losing 6-1, and then he'd go run back down to his seat. Came back up yelling, you know, of course, as the game goes on, people drink more and more beer. And there were people that were yelling at this guy, swearing at him. And they ended up having the police, they're all over the place, that was standing up, you know, maybe on the one level there. He had to come down and tell this guy he would be escorted out if he kept doing this. Mm-hmm. Because the guy would have caused a fight. These people that were yelling and swearing at him, we're going to do something more. So you don't do stupid things like that in Yankee Stadium.
Absolutely.
You cannot bring back, though. I mean, you and I, being a Yankee fan for so long, we went through some terrible years.
Of course.
I mean, terrible years. But the best time, I think, in my history with the Yankees was back in the 70s. When the Wade Boggs and Ron Guidry and Mickey Rivers and Roy White, Chris Chambliss played, and the rivalries with Boston, I mean, that they hated each other. I remember this is when they sold beer in glass bottles. They would throw bottles. Fans would throw bottles Boston was in the outfield. They had to stop the game, call the fans in, and then make the announcements on the radio. And, I mean, those games were unbelievable, both at Yankee Stadium and at Fenway Park. But that was the most, they said, the most hated rivalry in sports. And I kind of enjoyed it.
I did, too. I was in Fenway Park in 86, I think, when the Red Sox clinched the American League.
Okay.
And I was there as a Yankee fan, of course, wearing my Yankee hat, which the same thing.
You're dangerous.
They were, you know, but so a buddy of mine and I were there. The game was out of hand really early. Boston was well on their way to win. And sure enough, they come back to win. I look at a friend of mine. I said, he had a Yankee hat on. I go, I think it's time to take the hat off. Let's get these people their due. I mean, the place was going wild that they were now. This is 1986, obviously. They didn't win, but they made it to the World Series that year. And it was.
Well, I have to tell you about the year they won the first World Series. I was not diagnosed. They thought I had sleep apnea, which I ended up not having it. But I had to go to the place up here next to Saratoga Hospital and spend the night, supposedly. And I'm laying there watching the Yankee game. Now, this was the deciding game. The Yankees were up 3-0, and Boston won 4 games in a row to clinch that series.
I remember.
And I'm in there on that game when the fourth game they won. And I'm laying there, and I got this stinking mask on my face. And I'm getting all hyped up, all nervous. And I ripped the mask off. I said to the lady in the booth, this is it. I'm going home. I said, I can't stay here. Part of it was I'm so claustrophobic, and that mask was on, and I couldn't stand it. And second of all, I was getting so ticked off because Boston was winning that game.
Yeah.
And that probably started me on some sort of nervous breakdown. Because I could not believe it. Being up 3-0 and then losing 4 games in a row to the Red Sox, that was devastating. Yeah. And I'll never forget that.
Well, it's like you said, it's a rivalry that's worth billions, first of all. But it's just fun to be part of it. I mean, you just see these regional sports teams that have it. I can only imagine what in the old days when they had all of the Giants, the Dodgers, the Yankees, all in New York.
I know. That must have been awesome. That must have been incredible. I mean, what a time of sports in New York.
Yeah.
And the Giants played in New York, not in New Jersey. Yeah. I don't think the Jets were around back then, but it had to be an awesome sports town.
Well, really. our youngest went to Argentina for a period of time studying, and then the folks from Argentina that she stayed with came up here. So we went out to dinner, we did a bunch of different things, and they were explaining their passion for soccer. And I said, you know, what team do you follow? And they mentioned a team. I was like, I've never heard of them. Well, that's at our side of Buenos Aires, that's our soccer team. And the guy spoke up and he said, I will disown my daughter if she marries somebody who's for the other side of the town, has their soccer team. They literally wear their jerseys. They socialize that way. And if you go to the other side, the dark side, and follow another team, you're written right out of the family.
Well, soccer fans are more passionate than baseball fans.
I know.
I mean, you watch a soccer match like over in England and that, and they make noise the whole game.
Yeah.
I mean, there's never a quiet time like in baseball.
Yeah.
Never a quiet time. And they're doing the wave, they're singing, and that's a more passionate, I think, game than baseball or football even. But I can see that, though.
Yeah. They were, and I thought he was kidding with me. And I said, come on, really? And he goes, no. If she, as a young girl, every time she'd have a boyfriend, I'd say, where's he from? What street does he live on? You know, Buenos Aires is a big city, of course.
Oh, yeah.
And he, but it was the, it was a distinct line between teams, and it didn't make a difference what your politics were, but it's who, what your sports
what
team
your
was.
Sports team
and
was.
I just think that that's such a, well, you know, I forget, I think it was Malcolm Forbes or some one of the long, big-time business leaders years ago, always used to say, what do you do when you get up in the morning? And he goes, I read the sports page. And, you know, he was known as an international businessman, but he read the sports page because I always want to read about accomplishments rather than failures.
Yeah.
And so true. We all need that little pick-me-up of, like, my team, my this, my that.
Well, especially and, today. I mean, everything is so polarized.
Yes.
Politics, yep. sports. I mean, you know, politics yep. in the world. Yep. I mean, we're so open now. We know what's going on in the world
sure.
instantly.
Sure.
And so it's nice to get up and read the sports page and, you know, see yeah. how your team did, or even get online just for to see what your sports team did and
yeah.
not listen to the news. Yeah. I mean, it's, yeah, sports.
And it's funny because my dad was, you know, went through the 12th grade, one-room schoolhouse outside of Canajoharie, New York. And it turns out he, before he died, and he died relatively young. He's in his early 70s when he died. But I remember one morning sitting there talking to him long before we knew that he wasn't well. I said to him, what's the greatest thing that's happened to you? And he goes, aside from family, the greatest thing, I'm sitting here in front of a computer. Because we didn't have lights. We didn't have running water in my home when I was growing up. And here I am sitting there, and he was a big Detroit Red Wings fan
okay.
because of their farm team in Glens Falls, and that's where he was living. He said, I can sit here, and I can catch up on all the Detroit Red Wings news that happened last night right here at the breakfast table 6-7 hours after the game
yeah.
ended. And he said, to be able to be in touch with the world and their passions, like the Red Wings, was
sure.
pretty remarkable. And technology certainly helped us with that.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, and it's gone. Well, they say that the best thing for the country back, even today, especially during the wars, were movies where people mm-hmm. could get away mm-hmm. and forget everything and just watch entertainment mm-hmm. and sports, which took your mind off of mm-hmm. what was going on. Of course, mm-hmm. we didn't have the instant access. But even today, I mean, you know, you go see a movie or go to a sports game, watch that. It kind of takes your mind off of what's going on negative in the world,
yeah.
you know, unless your team's losing 12 to nothing. But,
yeah.
Hey,
so
I
got to ask one question.
Yeah.
At your advanced age, you're almost 100 years old, aren't you?
Close to it.
Close
yeah.
to it.
Yeah.
Did you see everything in black and white in those days, in the early days? Was everything just in black and white? But now that we've got color, was that something invented or was that real
in the day? I don't want to tell. I shouldn't say this, you know, because I still feel like I'm 30. But I saw my first color TV when I was in Cub Scouts. Our Cub Master had. We were ready to leave, and he had the TV on, and the Virginian was on.
Oh,
it
I remember that,
hour
yes.
hour and a half
yeah, sure.
Western.
Yeah.
And the grass was so green, and the sky was so blue, I couldn't believe it. And then, you know, maybe sometime after, because I grew up, we didn't have much when I grew up.
And we were like the Stone Ages, weren't
pretty
you?
Much, yeah. We drove a Fred Flintstone car. And matter of fact, my father's aunts, who were in their 90s, had they lived together after their husbands died. And we used to go visit them, and they had a small black and white TV. And to have a color TV back in their day, and they never got away from that, they had this screen they put on the TV. Blue, red, and green.
Yeah.
So you could watch any show, even if it didn't have grass,
yeah.
and the bottom of the screen was green,
yeah.
and the middle was red, and the sky was blue, even if you were inside.
That's right.
But it was just a riot what they did back then yeah. to get color.
Yeah.
But, yeah, I'll never forget. I mean, you know, black and white TV was the thing, and color TVs came out. They were very expensive, so, you know,
yeah.
you didn't get them right away, just like when computers first. I remember in school when calculators first came
out, sure.
Texas Instruments, and
yeah.
they were expensive.
Yeah.
And now you can get one for $5.
Yeah.
Not one of the big, you know, not one of the ones that can do calculus.
Yeah.
That, but,
yeah,
yeah it, you know. Seen a lot of things, and even computers. You know, I got my first computer, I forget when it was, in the early 90s. And look at how far that's advanced,
mm-hmm.
even.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, that's gone every year. I mean, there's just so many advancements.
Yeah.
And, Now, there's always one thing that I wish I could have gotten done in my life, if I was smart enough, was to get into computers and programming and that, because I'd love to program a bug, that a virus, that when someone sends you a virus, you can back it up.
Yeah, that's right, send it back.
Because, boy, that's getting terrible today.
Yeah.
And, yeah, I wish I knew how to do that, you know, and but, hey, alas, I didn't do it.
That's right.
Hey, what do you think about the Yankees getting rid of Stanton? Not that they are going to do it, but I think they're thinking about it. They're going to have to eat a lot of salary because I think he's...
Well, there's some interesting players available, and I think the Yankees have always been willing to do what it takes to get more interesting players, like a Stanton, obviously. Stanton's had a tough couple of years. It's funny. With the DH, as long as he can stay healthy, I think he has he's a very imposing threat. However, you know, we see some holes in our future. I love Rizzo at first base, but he's getting older. He's had a couple of injuries. The concussion stuff, you always worry that that's more of a permanent thing than anything else. You look at that roster, and, you know, years ago, you didn't have as many roster spots taken up as by pitchers. So you had the ability to have like 5, 6, 7 extra men sitting on the bench that could play.
Right.
You know, when you got a guy like Stanton who's one-dimensional, you kind of wonder. But
one-dimensional and hurt.
Yeah.
Quite a bit.
Yeah. Well, he's at point, like you were talking about Ichiro. Ichiro would be laying in the outfield. He stretched for 5 hours before a game.
Yeah.
Look up how many days he spent on the disabled list.
Yeah.
I don't think he was ever on the disabled list. If he did, he wasn't for very long.
No.
But the point is some of these guys are over muscle. They pull a muscle because they're, you know, and Stanton is, I mean, Stanton has such an unorthodox swing using just his upper body. But it's time to make some serious decisions.
Oh my gosh, yeah, they have to, and they've got the wherewithal to make some really good decisions, you know. But I mean, they're talking about one of the New York Post articles said the dump Met slugger is better than Yankees fit than Giancarlo Stanton.
Yeah.
And, Vogelbach. And, I don't follow the Mets, so I don't know how good of a player he is. No. But, I don't think they'll get rid of Stanton only because, you know, he's 4 more years at $118 million with a $25 million club buyout. And that's a lot of money.
Yeah.
And it's hard to make that up with the salary cap, you know. But I'll tell you, if George was around,
he'd be gone.
You'd see a different team.
Yep.
I'll tell you, you couldn't get.
Well, you know, we're a sentimental team. That's the other part. I mean, you look at LeMahieu. Love the guy. Love the guy. Is he playing to what his abilities were? No.
No.
But, you know, we don't want to get rid of him because he's always been a clutch guy, you know, good guy in the dugout, that kind of thing. So, but yeah, we've got to become a little bit more adept. But I have to admit that I am not a fan of the manager.
No,
I would like to think he's. I don't. I just have to look back and say he's not our guy.
I think Cashman needs to go too. Tell you the truth.
Yeah,
I think he's outlived his usefulness. I mean, Cashman and Boone. I mean, Boone hasn't gotten them anywhere. And I honestly, I know the pitching coach handles the pitchers, but I think he's the worst manager to handle pitchers.
Yep.
And I just don't think he can motivate the team. Yeah, he's a good guy. He tries to get on their level because he's an ex-player, but, you know, you can't have that. And
quite frankly, I don't think Don Mattingly, as much as I love the guy, I don't think he's the manager either.
No.
You look around the leagues that are having successful 10 years there. Dusty Baker was at, you know, Houston for a long time, and so was the guy from the Red Sox there for a while till he got caught cheating. But I didn't want to bring that up. But he wasn't the head coach. Hench was the head coach for the Astros when they got cheating. But you just look at, like, what's the dynamics of a successful management team inside a team like that. I mean, you like to have an economically supercharged team like the Yankees and the Red Sox and the Dodgers, but it's like, who's going to, you got to play between the lines.
Yeah.
Right. And, you know, I used to teach a class, it talked about coaching, you know, teaching a young sales manager how to be a better sales manager. And up from the middle of the presentation comes a picture of Ted Williams, arguably the greatest baseball player ever, if you could give him back his 5 or 6 years. Now, I don't like the Red Sox, but you look at his statistics and say, if you gave him back those years as a player instead of being a fighter pilot in Korea, right, well, how would he be? He'd have every record because he was an incredible player.
Yeah.
But what did he do afterwards? And he was the greatest baseball player to leave the game. He was the worst manager after that. He managed the Washington Senators and the Texas Rangers. He was dismal as a coach.
Yeah.
Dismal. Because his abilities, he knew what his abilities were, and he just couldn't convey that to the people on the field.
Yeah.
And ultimately, that's what I think some of our managers are. And then there are managers that didn't play a whole lot, but they have the great presence of how to call a game, and like you said, how to call pitches, do this, bring a player in, get a player out. Yeah. And there's just some that just don't get it.
Bring, you know, bring back Earl Weaver.
That's
bring
right.
back Billy Martin.
Yeah.
I mean, guys that, I mean, Martin played, but boy, he knew how to jack the players.
Someone said that he had the greatest command of the rule book that anybody ever knew. I mean, the thing that comes to mind, of course, is the Greg Nettles game with the pine tar.
Yeah.
That he went out there measuring, and he was right, but it wasn't the right time, right?
Right.
Nettles came out, or George Brett came charging out, nearly killed one of the referees. But the rule was the rule, and that's the way that Billy Martin was. And they said that they interviewed an umpire one time. They said Billy would quote you the rule, what page it was on.
Oh, wow.
He knew the rule book so well. But he was also, you know, a kind of an odd duck to begin with.
Oh, yeah, he was a firebrand, no doubt about it.
Yeah.
But I loved the guy.
I mean,
back then I loved the managers that really got into it with the umpires. Mm-hmm. And I think Earl Weaver was one of the best for that coach Baltimore. But Billy Martin, I'll tell you, I loved it. You know, Lou Piniella was at the track one time.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah, he was with Bill Parcells. He sat in, I mean, Parcells is there every day.
Yeah.
And he was sitting in his box. And, of course, you know I'm where I am, and I'm right in the boxes. So I saw Piniella go over to the betting window. So I walked over to him, and I said, hey, Lou, I got to tell you, you're one of my favorite players of all times. And he goes, why? And I said, because you're not only a good player, but I love the way you used to mound the plate with dirt and then kick it at the umpire. And I said, you know, you don't see that anymore. And he said, well, thanks. He said, you know, I appreciate that. But you didn't want to bother him for long. But now the poor guy, you know, is not doing too well. But hey,
I thought you were going to say that he threw his beer at you.
No. He didn't throw his beer at me. But no, I think he's fighting Alzheimer's now, if I'm not mistaken. Yeah. But anyway, I wanted to touch base. We've got just, believe it or not, about 5 minutes to go before Homer gets in here.
Mm-hmm.
I want to touch base about politics a little bit.
Oh, sure.
And, you know, John.
Oh, isn't that great?
John won. Yeah.
You know, it's funny. I like anybody who goes out and runs for office and holds office. You got to give them credit. It's quite remarkable,
and it's
a tremendous sacrifice. So Ron and his family sacrificed a great deal.
Yes.
Didn't work out, obviously. And John has always been just a stand-up guy. I've always liked John.
Yeah. I had him on the show for years. I mean, he ran three other times and didn't win. But, you know, and this year was a little bit different circumstances, but he's a nice guy.
Oh, yeah.
I think he'll know how to manage. You know, he'll bring back, one of his biggest things is bring back civility.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
And I think he'll do that really well. One of the things that we may do, he wants to have a Mayor's Corner on the show, and which I think is pretty good. And I'm anxious to see how he does.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I think he'll be really good. He's got some great ideas, but you know, he won't come out and say it, but sometimes he mentions it about needing to change the form of government.
Yep.
And we can never get that side to agree. And it was funny because a friend of mine who I grew up with ended up moving to Boston Spa. He's a retired fireman. He's a fire marshal at the track. He was saying that, one of the Saratogians moved into his, he lives in the Winter Circle up there. And he was talking to him about Saratoga. And the guy says, hey, look, you know, if it ain't broke, don't fix it. I said, you know what? That's a saying they've been using for 80 years up here.
Yeah.
And But do you think, well, in my lifetime, we'll ever see another
charter change?
Yeah, another.
Oh, absolutely. Great, I mean, how many? First of all, you see such a turnover in the voter base. Before it was everybody was born and raised here, and there's a certain degree of happiness about that, which is fine. However, you just go back to the thing, like, name a football team that has five head coaches.
Yeah.
Name an orchestra that has five orchestra leaders.
Right.
There's nothing that resembles the commission form of government.
No.
And we are now have the proud ownership. We have the largest municipality in the world that has the commission form of government.
I think the only thing that has five heads are a trampoline act.
Oh, yeah.
And that's comedy. So there you go. That says it all. Hey, Pat, thanks for being
My
here.
My pleasure, Rick. Always good to see you.
I know. It goes by so fast when we're just...
And for a guy that's nearly 100 years old, you look pretty good.
You know what? I'll tell you what. It's the drugs, man. The drugs.